This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. I must confess, today's podcast is one of my favorite guests. He's a perennial contributor to Intelligent Medicine. He is Dr. David Perlmutter, a.k.a. the Empowering Neurologist. He's America's preeminent integrative neurologist. He's virtually defined the field with his innovative contributions. In particular, you're well aware of the very influential book, Grain Brain, which has now come back in a revised second edition. He is an expert on the relationship between diet and lifestyle and the brain. And he's really taken the science forward, winner of numerous awards. He's got some great new projects that I want to share with you. Without further ado, it's a pleasure having you on board, David. Nice to have you back.
Well, thank you. It's absolutely a pleasure. I always have the best time on your program. We have a great time.
Okay, yeah, our repartees are really excellent. Several projects you have on board. One is something called Alzheimer's, the Science of Prevention. It's a new documentary series, and I believe it's going to be launched next month for fall of 2019. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the as you say, it's a docu-series, and it is one that is focused on the notion that Alzheimer's is a preventable disease. And, you know, that in and of itself is something that really a lot of people don't want to embrace. They want to believe, as not just with Alzheimer's, but across the board, that our maladies are just happenstance or genetic, and we really have no role to play in choosing our destiny. Well, when it comes to Alzheimer's disease that, you know, now is affecting 5.8 million Americans, that number is going to triple by the year 2030, which is just around the corner, we have no treatment at all whatsoever.
And drugs have been a really conspicuous failure. Literally, the pharmaceutical industry has invested billions and billions of dollars in Alzheimer's research, and they're looking for that magic bullet, that pill that will clean out amyloid plaque or prevent its development. And that just hasn't panned out. And actually, several big drug companies have kind of withdrawn from the Alzheimer's research field because it's just not paying off for them.
Well, that's right. You know, of course, they're looking at their shareholders, not their stakeholders. And we're all stakeholders as it relates to Alzheimer's disease. We're all at risk. You know, even with no family history, your risk is 50-50 if you live to be age 85. So by any definition, we are looking at an epidemic here for which there is absolutely no treatment that works at all. I mean, that's reality, and yet we know staring us in the face is monumental literature showing that, as a matter of fact, our lifestyle choices play a very major role in determining our risk for this untreatable disease. It's confounding to me why we don't talk about that, because you know, if we would come up with a cure for it, then by all means, let's talk about that and make the world know that. Pfizer is a pharmaceutical company that, as you rightly stated, has backed out of research in this neurodegenerative condition. They just finally threw up their hands and said, you know, over a period of time, we're just not going to get the return on investment for our research dollars for our investors. Therefore, we quit. That's how frustrated they were, and rightfully so. And as you say, you know, this notion of trying to get amyloid out of the brain has been an abject failure in terms of being successful as a way to treat these unfortunate individuals. Now, we contrast that with the literature. The most well-respected publications on the planet are talking about how keeping our blood sugar low, how physical exercise, how engagement with other individuals, how meditation, how various lifestyle choices, making sure our sleep is restorative, for example, play major roles in terms of the destiny of the human brain, and specifically major roles as they relate to being associated with reduced risk for developing Alzheimer's in the first place. So, you know, what this docuseries is all about is the notion of preventive medicine as it relates to your brain. And I had a great time interviewing our participants, and I'm going to be so thrilled when this airs that the world will finally see that, you know what, the ball's been hit back to our side of the court, and we now have to figure out how we're going to play it.
Now, so how is this going to, what's the vehicle for this? Is this a PBS special, or is this something that's going to be available via webinars? How do you,
yeah, this are you getting is a webinar that begins October the 9th, and it airs for all of the episodes. It's free. It's online. People can get information about it by going to scienceofprevention.com.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just so thrilled with the stature of the individuals who elected to participate in sharing their wisdom with us. People like Dr. Dale Bredesen at UCLA, as you know, Dr. Jeffrey Bland, one of our mentors, that's for sure, Dr. Dominic D'Agostino, very big in the keto world, University of South Florida. Mm-hmm. Dr. Kirk Erickson.
Also hyperbaric oxygen. He believes in teaming those up, you know, as being really a powerful double modality to get rid of cognitive compromise.
Yeah. I mean, my goodness, we started that line of research about 22 years ago. And then probably the father of the whole notion that aerobic exercise can be good for the brain, Dr. Kirk Erickson from the University of Pittsburgh, Dr. David Ludwig from Harvard, Dr. Mm-hmm. Walter Longo with the fasting mimicking diet, Dr. Sarah Gottfried, who a physician writing the book called The Brain Body Diet, Lisa Moscone, Dr. Moscone, director of the Women's Brain Initiative at Weill Cornell, right there where you are, just a host of really top-notch individuals who are simply sharing their story, what they've learned. And what they've learned is that the things we do today are extremely important in terms of the state of health of your brain and its functionality tomorrow, a time that is going to come and a time that will likely present itself in the face of no treatment for Alzheimer's disease. So, you know, we're getting out there and going to yell this information to as many people as will listen.
Great. And that, do we have a website where the information is available on that?
Yes, that is Science of Prevention, one word, scienceofprevention.com.
And, of course, at your website, drperlmutter.com, I'm sure there are links to the new documentary series.
We are all over it. If they go to scienceofprevention.com, they'll get uniquely that information about the webinar. Our website, of course, is, you know, the other things that we're doing right now. We have a new book coming out, which is called The Microbiome and the Brain. And it similarly is a compilation of the work of many who are in this field exploring the role of, believe it or not, our gut bacteria mm-hmm. in terms of the health, the current functionality, the destiny of the human brain.
I mean, and by the way, you're an editor of a scientific journal, a new journal, the Gut-Brain Journals. Is that what it's called?
No, actually, it is this book. It's become a book, which is called The Microbiome and the Brain.
So the book is the culmination of all that work. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And just about done with that. I am the editor, so I got to review and, you know, meticulously and take apart each of the submissions. And I must say that some incredible quality work that was written in a way as to make it very user-friendly, but for the professional. So this is... I want to say it's not a book for the faint-hearted, but it's pretty darn technical.
So, sir, our wonky intelligent medicine listeners, I think, probably can keep up with it.
Oh, absolutely. You salivate with this kind of stuff. But the science of prevention, the Alzheimer's prevention docuseries, is for everyone.
Uh-huh.
And you know, just great information. And what's so important about that is at the end of every segment, there's a summary in terms of, well, what did we learn? What are the five takeaway points that you can implement in your life today to help reduce your risk of Alzheimer's? Get exposed to nature. Pay attention to the quality of your sleep. With all sorts of sleep hygiene recommendations, for example, that can be implemented to improve the quality of your sleep. We know that sleep is the time that your brain activates what's called the glymphatic system, the time that the brain basically takes out the garbage. Some of that garbage is a worrisome amyloid protein and tau protein, that accumulation of which has been associated with Alzheimer's disease. So just simple recommendations like that, how you can change your own DNA expression. I mean, who knew when you and I were coming up in the years, who knew that, you know, our DNA was not locked in a glass case, and we can change its expression by changing our diets, by engaging in aerobic exercise, by making sure our sleep is restorative, by meditating, by taking certain supplements, etc.
Yeah, I want to focus on that particular aspect of things, because now even 23andMe is offering hints as to whether people are likely to be susceptible to Alzheimer's disease. There's a gene, the APOE4 gene, you're well familiar with it, and many of our listeners have heard about it, that is considered virtually a sentence that you will develop dementia and eventually Alzheimer's disease. But there's some new findings about neuroplasticity, or about gene expression, as you so eloquently describe it, that suggests that your genes are not your fate.
Yeah, that's, you know, it sort of flies in the face of what we were told and taught, and that is that, again, our genes are locked in a glass case and determine everything about us. And we know that's just really not true, that we have a very strong role to play in that over 90% of genes that are involved in health and longevity actually are, to some degree, over our control in terms of the choices day-to-day of lifestyle parameters that we engage. We don't necessarily change the expression of the APOE suite of genes, but we do have the opportunity to change other factors that can then reduce what these genes and their expression may do. And by that I mean we do associate the APOE4, number 4 allele, with increased risk of about fivefold in terms of Alzheimer's, and if you carry two of those genes, as much as 12-fold increased risk. But at the same time, we can turn down risk by engaging in certain lifestyle parameters that will reduce gene expression or what other genes are doing, so we can absolutely offset the risk. There's an interesting study that looked at the amount of beta amyloid in the brain, and looked at the amount of amyloid in the brain in individuals, really comparing those with pre-diabetes or diabetes versus those who did not have diabetes or pre-diabetes, and also looked at those individuals who did or did not carry the APOE gene, the so-called Alzheimer's gene. And what was really incredible and empowering is the fact that, yes, APOE4 does code for increased amyloid in the brain, which is ostensibly an Alzheimer's risk. But if you have higher levels of insulin resistance, much more amyloid accumulates in the brain. The message here is simple. You can't change whether or not you've got the APOE4 allele from mom or dad, but you sure as heck can change your level of insulin resistance or sensitivity.
So you can turn down the volume on the gene expression.
That's right. Yeah. So you can have a huge effect on your ultimate accumulation of this worrisome protein in your brain. Can't change your gene expression as it relates to APOE4, but you can certainly decide, I'm not going to have insulin resistance because I'm going to cut down on my simple carbohydrates and exercise more and eat more good fat and maybe fast from time to time, etc. Things that I'm sure your listeners have heard over the years. So it's not all or none. And even beyond APOE4, we know that there are presenilin genes 1 and 2 that are strong indicators of even early onset Alzheimer's disease that we need to think about, that do become part of a person's genetic profile when we undergo one of these studies. But they're strong, more strongly determinant, but then again, at the end of the day, they're not black and white. There is gray area, and it's in that gray area that we have our leverage.
So, David, you'll well recall, you know, a couple of decades ago, when we first became aware of APOE4 as a risk factor for dementia and Alzheimer's disease, and cardiovascular disease in general, that there was a dictum. It was kind of the orthodox view that if you had the gene, you should be in an ultra low fat diet. You should eschew any saturated fat. It should be very low cholesterol. And yet there was a recent study, I'm sure you're familiar with it. It's from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, that looked at egg consumption and the risk of stroke. Okay. Stroke can be used as sort of a proxy for neurodegenerative disease and dementia, perhaps. It's not the same, but certainly the processes, overlap. Eggs had no impact on stroke, even in patients who had APOE4 genes. So what say you? What's more important? What's a more important consideration? Is it saturated fat and cholesterol, as was once thought, or is it insulin, as you mentioned earlier?
Well, I'm going to say, it may be, don't look at this as some sort of cop-out. I think we have enough information now that we can be much more specific for individuals, based not just upon their genetic profile that we're able to obtain, but even more based upon the change in their biomarkers as we move through various types of interventions. So not everybody responds the same. And I think that's really very, very important. I mean, we certainly in this era of personalized medicine are moving away from the notion of one size fits all, whether it has to do with eating saturated fat or eggs, or even more, even broader stroke recommendations. The study that you talked about, with respect to egg consumption and cholesterol intake and risk of stroke, study that was in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, which I think is a terrific journal, really I think concluded that this relationship is limited to start off with, but that the relationship was even less demonstrated in people who carried this worrisome APOE4 allele. So I think we have to learn a lot more. And I think, again, there are clearly some broad stroke recommendations that we can make. But I think at the same time, we have to be aware that there is great value in understanding the personalized approach to what that specific patient needs. So broad stroke recommendations are that the biggest player here in terms of being a concern are the refined carbohydrates across the board. That dietary fat is important, but we need to be a little bit more selective, that we were overblowing the concern and dangers of saturated fat for many, many years. There's a wonderful, Nina Teicholz wrote a book about fat and, you know, the whole, everything that went into why we castigated it so. But I think that, again, we have these broad stroke recommendations. And at the end of the day, I think that, you know, I don't want to say it's all about the paleo movement, but we have to recognize that so many aspects of our modern life are conflicting with our genome. That our environmental exposures in terms of the things we choose, et cetera, things that we don't necessarily choose, are really conflicting with how our genome wants to express itself. You know, pretty much everyone alive today, absolutely everyone alive today harbors a genome that has been refined over about 2.4 million years and got them to this point. So it's a pretty darn good genome, save for some very subtle nuances that define each of us as an individual. But pretty much, you know, the playing field was pretty standardized over a long period of time, just until about 12,000 years ago, when suddenly, with the development of agriculture at multiple sites around the world, the diet of humans changed to one that is really focused on giving us far more carbohydrate, far less fiber, certainly far less a good quality fat than ever before, and our genomes have absolutely not had time to adapt to that.
Mm-hmm. We've not been able to play catch up ball. We have also the advent of drugs that dramatically lower cholesterol, and I know that you've written extensively about the role of cholesterol in the brain. According to some studies, people who've had heart attacks, that may help them. But are we compromising brain function in an effort to save our coronary arteries?
Well, I would first challenge the notion of saving the coronary arteries. I'm going to say statin drugs because likely that's what you're referring to.
Yep. So the more powerful injectable, drugs.
I think that we've got to operate under the dictum of above all do no harm, and we cannot disregard the data that shows a very strong relationship between dementia risk and lower cholesterol. I mean, for years we watched as cholesterol was castigated as being the devil's plaything, and yet now we recognize that we should have recognized all these years that our bodies make cholesterol because we desperately need it. We need this precursor for our sex hormones, progesterone, testosterone, estrogen. Mm-hmm. We need it to make cortisol, a stress-related hormone. We need it to make vitamin D, for crying out loud. And cholesterol is a building block of cell membranes, and it's also, oddly enough, an antioxidant, at least in terms of brain function. We know that lower levels of cholesterol are associated with cognitive dysfunction and even depression and suicidal ideation. So those things absolutely have to enter into the discussion as put up against the data, which is sketchy, that somehow lowering cholesterol is going to be good for your coronary arteries. The story is certainly far more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. We need cholesterol. And, what is a coronary occlusion, it's basically caused by ultimately a rupture of a plaque caused by a high degree of inflammation and oxidative stress at that level within the artery. And finally, that plaque dislodges and narrows the artery. So there's a lot more going on. We need to be paying attention to the relationship, for example, not only between elevation of blood sugar, which is so easy to control based upon diet, and coronary artery risk, why diabetics, for example, have such a high heart attack risk, but also a little bit more esoteric markers like lipoproteins and particle size, and also straightforward oxidized bad cholesterol or oxidized LDL, which many labs are now measuring and make available to clinicians and therefore their patients.
We even have some studies that suggest that cholesterol feeding, literally giving cholesterol crystals to animals with an experimental model of MS, can alleviate the MS. It seems to support myelin preservation. So that really kind of flies in the face of a lot of the preventive efforts that we're throwing at people who, say, have had strokes, immediately they're put on statin drugs. Maybe we're taking a wrong turn.
Well, again, like anything else, I think that we've got to really consider what are the downstream potential issues that we are producing when we think we are helping people by these short-sighted interventions. As an example, one of the consequences that is absolutely ubiquitous amongst the experimental treatments to try to lower amyloid in the brain of patients with Alzheimer's has been making their dementia worse. Now, obviously, then you wouldn't want to use that drug. It's the thing you're trying to treat. Mm-hmm. But lo and behold, in the Journal of the American Medical Association, published in November of 2018, was a very extensive article that demonstrated that a class of drugs called cholinesterase inhibitors also lead to more rapid cognitive decline.
Major category of Alzheimer's drugs.
Exactly. That the number one drug prescribed by neurologists and other doctors in America to so-called treat Alzheimer's disease is actually speeding up their cognitive decline. And I want your listeners just to think about what I just said. It would be like treating people with high blood pressure with a drug that raises their blood pressure, or giving diabetics a drug that raises their blood sugar. It's making Alzheimer's patients worse, and yet it's still a multi-million dollar drug, hundreds of million dollars, being spent on this class of medication. It's the number one
that
prescribed
would be
so-called...
drugs like Aricept and so on, yeah.
Donepezil, Aricept,
yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Cholinesterase inhibitors. And it wasn't like this was something somebody wrote in a throwaway thing that was in your shopping bag at the
right.
health food store.
It wasn't the natural news. It was, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, where good things are often published.
Yeah.
It was put out by the American Medical Association, having gone through their review process, saying that the Alzheimer's drugs that could be prescribed for our parents, or God forbid for us, to help us with our Alzheimer's are actually making us worse. And I couldn't make this up. It's breathtaking.
Yeah, that's really disconcerting. All right, David, as you know, we divide these podcasts into two parts. So we're going to pause at this point, and we're going to go to a part two in just a moment. I got a lot more questions for you, including questions about gluten. Your first book, Grain Brain, kind of blew the lid off the gluten connection. I want to revisit that with you, and also some other subjects like what supplements you recommend these days, if there's any new supplements, new kids on the block in terms of brain support. We're going to tackle those in part two of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Our guest is the empowering neurologist. He's Dr. David Perlmutter. He's got a bunch of projects lined up, The Science of Prevention, and a new documentary series coming out next month. Also, in 2020, in early January, Brainwash, a new book that I'm going to talk to him about in just a moment. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.